Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the manager today of the Guitar Shop.
Dangerous.
Well, mate, he's not here. So
how has that happened?
I don't know how it's happened. I'm far more responsible than I appear.
You are. You've been very responsible.
What can I tell you? I've been cussing people out. Not customers, staff, you know, and behind the lines.
You mean is you've been working people really hard, making sure all the stuff gets done?
Yeah.
It's been good.
That is what I mean. Yeah, I'm far more abrasive than I appear, I may seem.
That cardigan doesn't lead to a sort of drill sergeant-esque appearance.
What can I tell you? It's you shouldn't judge people on their appearances.
On their cardigans.
On their cardigans.
Jay's got a cardigan with hearts on for people
it
who can't
have hearts see. On. Although I'd be all right with that. I've got quite a lot of, I think the cardigan, I'm always the only person in the room wearing a cardigan.
Yes, this you're the only person out. In 2014 wearing a cardigan.
I go to, like, every time I go to a gig, I look around, which is like every other night. I look around and I'm the only person in a cardigan.
That's because you go to punk rock gigs.
Cardigans are the most ergonomic
jumper.
Just like form of clothing. Like, you don't always want a hoodie because it's, I mean, you look like a scruff bag.
Yeah, I'm wearing a hoodie. Yeah. So what?
I just think, you know, cardigans are just great. They're just great.
Who else is with us this evening?
Hi. I'm Joe and I'm the assistant manager in the guitar shop.
Today, basically, today. Yes. Joe's been drafted in to you're almost like the army to stop the tide. You're here to stop the tide of
King
customers.
King Canute.
Exactly.
Matt called in sick today. I hope you're feeling better.
It's the first time I can ever remember him in, what, 6 or 7 years that he's worked here? It's the first time I can remember him genuinely calling in sick.
Yeah, he wasn't very well yesterday, but he came in because someone else called in sick. But today, two people called in sick, and he's still called in sick.
That doesn't make any sense.
So,
we're one man down. Matt's out today. Matt's probably in bed, and I'm sure he'll listen to this at some point. So, if you want to send him your get well messages, just
you'll be a week too late.
Yeah, you'll be a week too late. But send him get well messages on Twitter anyway. Matt_Nightsy is the place you can find him. Gents. We've got some news to talk about this evening. There's not a huge amount, but I thought we'd do some news, then some staff picks, and I asked for loads and loads of questions.
Yeah, the questions came in
thick and fast.
Often, like, we ask and we might get sort of 3 or 4 sort of over the course of like a few days.
Do you know what the difference was? I asked on Facebook today. We got loads of questions from Facebook. I usually ask on Twitter, and we normally ask on the end of the podcast for people's input as well, but yeah, I think each week I'm going to put a shout out on Facebook saying what people want to know, but we'll try and get through as many as possible in the allotted time.
Also, you say, you know, there's not a lot of news. The news is we've got is pretty big news.
Yeah, it's still pretty good.
Let's head straight into news.
Okay.
This product has not, when we're recording this, hasn't launched yet. It launches on Friday. We're recording on Thursday, so you probably will hear about it already, or will have heard about it already, because it will be everywhere. Yeah. Absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. Basically, we just want everyone to know that we knew way before you, and it's been a secret for ages.
I have even played on it.
Yeah.
So, what we're talking about, and this isn't actually particularly guitar related, but it's so cool and so big, it's worth a mention anyway. This is the Roland Ira series.
I don't understand the pronunciation.
Ira.
Aira. It's spelled with an A.
Yeah.
Aira. Yeah, that's how you...
Aira.
No, Aira.
Aira, like a clothes era.
No, that would be...
I thought that's what it was. When people said Roland are releasing an Aira, I was like, moving into homewares. Bold.
No, it's
above and beyond.
It's, yeah, if Matt's dream could finally come true, the BED1.
Exactly.
No, this is the Aira, which is their new range of...
Aira.
Aira.
You just said Aira. Let's just call it Aira.
Aira.
Buck the trend.
Roland Aira. It's their new range of pro audio stuff. Studio stuff, also for live performance. We don't normally talk a lot about the pro audio gear, but like I said, this is so cool and like so big, I thought it would be worth a mention. And I spent all day with two of the products yesterday. The TR-8, which is the new drum machine, which basically contains component modelled versions of the TR-808, TR and TR-909, which are the I guess, the two most famous drum machines
even
ever.
Even I know what these things are. I don't know anything about Pro Audio.
I understand
audio
that
stuff.
You can even... I was speaking to Dan Ward, the manager of our Pro Audio department, and he was telling me you can even USB in the new drum machine and have access to all of the 808 and 909.
You can. So let me... I'll run down the products.
Oh, sorry, yeah,
so
of course.
In the Aura range... you've got TR-8, which is the drum machine containing the two legendary drum machines. The TB-3, which is the TB-303 classic
right.
bass. The System 1 keyboard and the Vocal Transformer. Those are the four products. System 1 is like a VST-based controller keyboard that you can then download the sounds back into, so when you go out live... You gotcha. Can take the sounds that you've been working on your PC, saved in there.
It's kind of like a reverse MIDI keyboard, kind
yeah,
of.
Kind
like,
of.
With a MIDI keyboard, you use the sounds that are in the computer or whatever you're using.
Yeah.
And you just use the keyboard to control them. Whereas with this, what did Jeff call it? Jeff from Roland gave me the sort of lowdown on it a couple of days ago.
Jeff Nerona.
It's like... up sourcing or I can't remember
this is a great story.
It's an amazing scramble for the
really?
Word there.
Anyway,
so basically
yeah,
what you're doing is it allows you to use the sounds on the computer, and it's VST based, so Roland can expand it as much as they want. So the main one, I think they're calling the System 1000, but they're going to do like an SH-101 and some loads of their classic sounds. And the Vocal Transformer is based on a kind of old range of vocal transformers they used to do, but with expanded stuff, really good for vocal performance. The two that I spent time with yesterday, the TR-8 and the TB-3, we went out to visit the guys from Freemasons, who
right.
are kind of a big production team. And also we spoke to Paul Hartnell from Orbital, and he tried it out, and he's like, you know, the pioneer of this stuff in the UK, really. Like, Orbital used loads of 808s and 909s really early on. Kind of almost, excuse me, almost brought those sounds to the UK. He tried it and went, I'd have no problem taking this out instead of my classic drum machines.
Yeah.
And you think those drum machines now are worth, you know, $2,000 to $2,500 each.
Wow.
Best thing about these products, so affordable. $399 for the TR-8.
Yeah. Really?
Even I'm thinking about getting one. Like, I'm trying to slim down the music equipment I've got, but spending the day with him yesterday, I was like, this is wicked. Loads of classic beats, loads of classic sounds. Not really a guitar product at all, but just so cool.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Cool. And like you were saying, another impressive feature, 16 channels of audio over USB
yep.
out to the computer, which I don't know how they've done it. Was it 16 or is it 14? Sorry, 14 channels of audio out to USB. I don't know how they've done it safely, you know, without, you know, super low latency, still sounds really good. So really good for a studio production tool as well. And I think that kind of really epitomises what they're doing with this. You know, Roland have for a while been seen as like a bit uncool. And we talked about this with Boss as well.
Yeah.
You know, when Jamie was in from Boss, you were saying, Jay, that, you know, Boss have kind of been a kind of safe
yeah.
company for a while. And
yeah,
they're
yeah.
really like... branching out there. We talked about the ME80, we talked about the new MDP based compact pedals, OD1X and DS1X, and the Aura is kind of doing that for the Pro Audio side
Brilliant.
Of things.
Yeah,
it is
about time, but it's a really welcome kind of step forward for
definitely,
Roland.
Definitely. I think, you know, this is a guitar focused podcast, but anyone listening should go and check out the Aura stuff. Just
the
really
Aura.
fun. It's Aura
spelled Aura.
It's really fun, really hands-on. If you like, if you're just thinking about dabbling in electronic music in any way, go and check it out, and just check out the concept of it, because I think it speaks volumes about Roland and to a certain extent Boss and how those companies are kind of going into 2014. I think these will be on our Gear of the Year lists without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I think
that so. TR-8 at $399, like
it just seems silly. It just seems really silly how.
It's almost too cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, highly recommended. And that's probably the biggest news for this week. I just want to talk about some other bits that have arrived in store. A couple of new Gibsons. The Gibson Billy Gibbons.
Yep.
That's not easy to say.
The Gibson Billy Gibbons. It's relatively easy to say.
Gibson Billy Gibbons.
I struggled.
Okay.
The Gibson Gilly Bibbons.
New custom shop guitar. Billy Gibbons signature. Apparently it's been in the works a little while.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It's the Billy Gibbons signature gold top. So it's got his signature sort of wavy
pinstriping is what it's called.
Did you say earlier that it comes strung with eights?
It comes strung with eights, which is what he can still uses.
Sweet.
Well, is it? I don't know. See, here's the thing. When we found out it was strung with eights, me, Mark and Matt all just went, what?
That SG.
What?
Thingies. SG came with eight.
Zappa.
Yeah, Zappa.
Did it? Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, anyway, you're just sitting, oh God, that's going to be awful. Like, that's far too light for a Les Paul. And then you play it, and actually, it plays really, really nicely.
Really?
And the eights really make sense.
It's not something that I would do personally on any of my guitars, just because I play a bit heavier. Mm-hmm. But if you want, it's weird, eights on a Les Paul. I've talked about this before, because one of the guys who used to work here used to string his Les Pauls with eights.
Right.
And what it almost gives you is like a kind of hybrid between like a Gibson and a Fendery sound, like,
yeah,
you get loads more snap to it.
Yeah.
It's not nowhere near as thick sounding, obviously. And he swore by it. He was like a Les Paul connoisseur, and he was like, "Yeah, best thing you could ever do with a Les Paul is put eights on it." I'm not sure I agree with that.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting way of changing the tone.
I think if you're looking for that Billy Gibbons sound, it does kind of make sense.
Yeah,
you know, it's very, like you say, it's very snappy and very jangly almost,
yeah,
which isn't a word that you'd ever neither of those are words that you'd sort of contribute to a Les Paul, you know, attribute to a Les Paul. And yeah, it plays really nicely, and I think it will go to, I think, you know, someone who's into that sort of ZZ Top thing will be really into it.
Even just people that are into Les Pauls, really, because it is a really different experience. The other thing to mention, that it's quite heavily chambered, so
yeah,
it's like super lightweight.
Light. Yeah, yeah.
And that definitely affects the tone as well. Like,
oh,
that's definitely
a shadow of
changing
doubt, yeah,
it. So you got this kind of weird, airy, snappy Les Paul that's not really like anything else
no.
that we've got in stock, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And obviously, you know, it's gold top and pinstriped, and it looks completely different.
It's just master tone as well, isn't it? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think it's volume for each pickup and then just master tone.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture in front of me. I hadn't even noticed that. There's only three controls
yeah,
on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Wait, is there even a pickup selector? There's no pickup selector.
No, there's not. That's right. That's why you've got... Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've just got volume for the two pickups.
So you have individual volume controls like you would on a jazz bass or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have completely played this guitar,
yeah,
and I didn't even notice.
Yeah, well, that's because you probably just had the neck pickup rolled down anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that shows, like, how much attention I pay to the neck pickup on guitars. I'd recommend checking it out. The other Les Paul that's come in, and kind of another big bit of Gibson news, is that there's more Collector's Choice guitars available. We just had Collector's Choice number 9, the Vic Duprat 1959 Les Paul, a.k.a. Believer Burst.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
It is. Probably the most expensive Collector's Choice that we've had in, £9,799. Have you had a chance to play on it yet?
I've not, no. I've been so busy this week, I've not had a chance to.
I think the thing that sticks out is, like, just from looking at it, is like the thickness of that maple top. It's like really heavily figured. It's like a stunning looking guitar. I mean,
yeah,
for 10 grand, you'd kind of expect
well,
it.
Well, yeah, absolutely would.
Believer Burst, I'm not sure where the name comes from. I'm just having a quick look over the spec now. I'll tell you why. It comes from the cover of Vic Duprat's 2013 book, Burst Believers.
Okay.
Which I assume is a Les Paul focused book, similar to Beauty of the Burst,
yeah,
that sort of thing. It's a stunning looking guitar visually. Matt was saying that he got a chance to have a play on it when I spoke to him via email earlier, and just says it kind of plays and sounds as you would expect. Chunky, you know, 50s Les Paul,
yeah,
kind of sound. Yeah, and definitely worth checking out as well. Some more news. I believe you've had the guys from Line 6 in, and we talked about Amplify quite a lot.
Yes.
There's some new things, or something got clarified about Amplify. Tell me what happened when the guys came in.
Okay, I'm not sure if you're going to say what I was going to say, but something that we didn't realise was
last week we talked about patch switching in between songs.
Yeah, the controller.
FPV Express.
The Express, the four button and then expression pedal unit works with it. And this apparently was news to the guys at Line 6. they said that they were updating the software.
Okay.
So as of I think if I remember correctly, again it was so busy this week. Matt was actually talking to them and I was working. If I remember correctly, they said that they were supposed to be updating the firmware or the software so that it was going to work, but they hadn't got around to doing it yet. But it does work. It does work anyway.
Oh,
They plugged it in, and they hadn't expected it to work. Apparently, they had never tested it, and it worked fine.
So, what does it do? Does it just switch between A, B, C, and D?
Yes. Yeah. And no. And the expression pedal works as well.
Okay. What does the A, B, C, and D change depending on what song you're listening to?
No. You have to assign the because you've got four assignable channels,
yeah,
so you have to assign those channels in advance.
Okay.
Because when you select,
they change when you change the song that
neither does your default patch until you select it yourself.
Okay.
So one of the things we did as an easy example was we played like My Name Is Jonas off the Blue album.
Yeah.
The Weezer Blue album, sorry. Off the Weezer Blue album. And there's kind of like two sort of main sounds there. There's, you know, like a drivey sound and a clean sound. And someone has made Blue album clean and Blue album drive for the amplifier. Now, if you start playing My Name Is Jonas, it doesn't automatically select any one patch. It offers you a selection that you can choose from.
It's the amp is still set to the previous sound you've been on.
Correct. And okay. Then you will go like, okay, cool, I want to play My Name Is Jonas. Cool, I'm going to start with the clean sound. So you could set patch A to Blue album clean and patch B to Blue album drive.
That's brilliant. That's pretty much the only problem that we had.
Absolutely, that's
before.
What we said was that, you know, it, and yeah, the fact that the Express works with it is brilliant. Is really, really good.
So basically, if you're, for example, a huge Weezer fan, you've got two of your Weezer patches saved in there.
Yes.
If you just love playing along to the Blue album,
yeah,
then you can have that on and just go to patch A and B.
Absolutely.
I wonder if later on down the line firmware will be updated so that you can have four sounds saved per song, or there's like, if they're going to expand that more.
I don't know. I don't know how it works. I from what I understand, I don't think so, because I think you can only preset
four memories in the
amp. I think you can only preset four memories, and then as you select a song, it will offer you the option to change to the one that matches the song that you're on.
Yes.
I believe is how it works. I could be wrong there. Like I say, I mean, I've not really had that much of a chance to sit down with it, but I believe that's the case.
Also, like we said last week, because a lot of it is kind of firmware-based and is working on the kind of the iOS side of things, there's so much they can do. They're not limited to like...
Yeah, I think we'll see lots of upgrades for
Definitely. And this is the same going back to Ira. There will be a lot of updates coming and new bits, and they'll tweak it and depending on response, because I just think that seems to be the way that it's going. Everyone who's kind of forward thinking is going to make these products last longer than
I think so. You know, it's looking good. All of this stuff's looking good.
One more bit of news this week, and Matt said we had to talk about it. Electro-Harmonix Soul Food.
Oh, how long have we been waiting for this? I can't wait. This is great.
They've finally arrived.
I've been getting hold of Electro-Harmonix every other week or so to see if there's any update on them.
Really?
So, for those who don't know, the Electro-Harmonix Soul Food has been is one of the newer pedals in their range. It was announced a month or so before NAMM, so December-ish. They've been impossible to keep in stock. So much so that I think our first few shipments have just gone straight out the door, like literally every unit.
Yeah,
Matt finally managed to get his hands on one this week. The subsequent delivery has now all gone out again, so we're still waiting for them. But interestingly, Matt did manage to have a go on one, and he said it's probably the best drive pedal that we sell. He described it as one of the best.
Wow.
He described it as one of the best drive pedals he's ever heard.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's owned drive pedals that are £500.
He's pretty flabbergasted at the price as well.
How much are they again?
$49.99.
Unbelievable.
If I remember correctly.
Unbelievable. They could have priced that at 120 quid and we'd be having the same discussion.
Well, it could be like a premium line. Mm. He was saying he doesn't know what they've done. They've just got it totally right. Like, it's just the best drive sound. 50 quid. I mean, I'm not sure how we're going to keep them in stock or how...
Ever. I'm not sure how other companies who make drive pedals are going to stay afloat.
Well, by the fact that probably Electro-Harmonix just can't make enough. So definitely worth trying out. We've not even got around to doing a video demo yet because literally Matt's had one out of the box for 5 minutes before his customer took it away. If you want to try one, best bet would just be hang fire. Just wait until we've actually got some in stock. And if you do get to try one, I would recommend just buy it straight away.
Yeah.
Electro-Harmonix are doing some great stuff. Soul food sort of epitomises that, really. Gents, let's do some staff picks quickly because we've got.
Early for staff
picks. It is early for staff picks, but we've got so many questions. I want to go question heavy on this podcast.
Okay.
There's a lot to talk about. Joe, what have you been playing this week?
Inspired by what we talked about last week. About how we're all really excited about the new Ibanez stuff. I went and picked up something I wouldn't normally go and pick up because I've sort of had my norms challenged and my I'm challenging my norms.
Okay, whose norm? Why are there multiples of them?
I was going to go for that gag, but then I realised how dad it was.
Yeah, that's a pretty dad gag.
Dad gag?
Oh my goodness.
There's a question about that in a minute. Anyway, tell us about your norms.
So I went and picked up the Ibanez AR420, which is, and I'm sure if anyone from Ibanez is listening to this podcast, they're going to be really annoyed with me describing it as very SG-esque. It's a double cut, very premium looking. It's very blingy. I'm trying to beat around the bush, but I'm saying it's very blingy. Gold hardware. Abalone inlays.
Yep.
It's like a flame top. It's that antique vinyl sunburst finish that. You know, it looks so lovely on those Ibanez guitars. The thing that really caught me about it is the switching system.
It's odd because
it's very odd, us a little bit of time to sort of to figure it out. And when I say figure it out, what I mean is we got bored of trying to figure it out and looked it up.
We should mention that it's laid out like a Les Paul.
Yes. So you've got a pickup selector switch, and then you've got two volume, two tone, and then you've also got two other switches. And what the other switches are is there's one attached to each pickup. So you've got one for the neck and one for the bridge. Now, in the standard position, it aligns the humbuckers as standard humbuckers. When you flick this switch into the middle position, it coil taps them. Now, we initially thought, well, of course, the third position is going to be phase. And we flicked it up, and it just sounded so loud, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. And what it actually does is it changes the configuration of the humbuckers to two single coils running in series, like everybody's favorite Telecaster, of course. Basically, it pushes the two. The two individual coils of the humbucker into series.
Yeah.
So you get like this real boosted, this real boost of a drivey humbucker sound. It sounds absolutely brilliant, but really, really good.
Like really different character to the humbucker standard. It's much more open sounding, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And like, I just thought this was a really, really cool guitar. Aesthetically, it's not what I would go for, but in terms of that pickup configuration, I think that's really, really cool, and I'm really into it. I thought it was really, really good. And apart from anything, it just sort of speaks volumes again, as we've said a few times over the last few weeks, about the cool stuff that Ibanez are doing at the moment
on the sneak
on the sneaky sneak
on the lowdown.
And and actually it's made me even more excited for the fact that me and Mark are going to Ibanez. We're going to Headstock, which is the UK distribution point for Ibanez guitars. We're going there next Wednesday.
Well, it'll be this Wednesday.
It will be in 2 days' time if you're listening to this.
We're going to head up there with Joss, who's our kind of shreddy guitar demonstrator.
He is.
Go and check out a load of Ibanez stuff, see what's new for 2014, and report
checking
back.
Checking out new Laney stuff as well.
Yeah, there'll be new Laney stuff. I mean, I kind of know what Laney have got, but I'm not sure exactly what Ibanez stuff is going to be there.
I just want to see the Noodles guitar.
See if you can.
I want to see the Noodles guitar.
Maybe you might actually do a demo.
Oh wow!
Oh, yeah, I should learn a couple of Offspring songs, shouldn't I?
Definitely do that. Also, whilst you're up there, you need to try and Twitter snap some of the single cut Ibanez BTB bass if you can.
I don't know if they'll be there, but we'll have a look.
Yeah,
I might have to do some bass demos.
Yeah, get a big jacket on and see if you can get me one.
Oh, right, okay. When you say Twitter snap, you mean steal?
Oh no! Well, take pictures
as well.
Twitter
snap a synonym for steal?
It's a new app. They're being done for a copyright violation as we speak.
Okay, from both Instagram and Twitter.
Snapchat. And
Snapchat, yeah.
Joe's just made
Twitter
up.
Snap. Have you heard of the internet, Joe? Is that what this is?
The what?
Twitter Snap. You sound like my dad. Again, dad gag.
Dad. We're really, really getting old, and it's quite noticeable that Joe and I are nearly 30.
Yeah,
nearly.
And
we're saying things like Twitter
We've
snap.
Got 4 months left.
That's quite down on things, isn't it?
I'm enjoying being mid-20s. This is exciting.
Let's raise the tone. Let's raise the mood.
All right.
Joe Branton, what have you been playing this week?
My stuff...
Can't raise the tone. Not with his choice. Not with this...
Well, no.
We'll roll down the tone.
The tone is off.
The tone is that there's no tone.
There's no tone. My staff pick this week is probably my favourite staff pick I've ever had. And for the first time, I think, ever, we're... It's a second hand item.
Didn't I pick the Engel Screamer last week?
Oh,
which I sold today.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
so yeah, fine. It's not the first second hand. It's my first second hand one.
Okay,
and it's my favourite staff pick I've ever had.
Personal best.
I'm gonna get it.
Personal best isn't the world record though, is it?
No, personal best is like. It's like his personal best might be
our personal worst.
Yeah, his a good day at the office for Joe is like just a sort of, you know. I don't know what.
Tell us what it is.
It is a German built Hofner 500/1 violin bass. It's an early 2000s build, and it's strung up with flats, and it sounds ridiculous.
People have been asking for sound samples on the podcast, and I think, you know, that's going to work, Joe.
Yeah, brilliant.
I think that's really what they were after.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. Well, it's absolutely wicked. It's, an early 2000s Hofner 501 violin bass. They're kind of very, very basic and simple, but this just sounds absolutely remarkable. The only ones we stock, the only ones we get in, are the cheaper range of the Hofner violin.
Well, they got
bases.
The Ignition series.
That's right, the Ignition series, which are absolutely brilliant for the money, because you know they're sub £300 for a violin bass.
They're basically, if you want something that looks like a violin bass, great option, probably the best option.
Absolutely, yeah.
This
they still
is entirely a different beast.
This looks the build quality on this is amazing, and it really it's a 60s reissue, and it looks sort of bang out of the 60s. It's been strung up with flats, and it's just all about that Paul McCartney kind of tone. We've been playing it through an Orange AD200 today. Mark did a much better job than me, because you've got much better I don't have any skill with a plectrum,
picking technique.
Yes, exactly. So and you were kind of running through some Beatles numbers, as you seem to know all of them.
Oh well, you know, he's one of my faves.
Exactly. But yeah,
it's the wrong way round though.
It is the wrong way round. I put this up on Facebook the other day and put something like Macca-tastic or perfect for the Macca collector, and someone just put, but it's not left-handed. Come on, cut me some slack. I've never played a German one before. I've played the Ignition series, and they're okay. Like I said, if you want something that looks like a violin bass, they'll do the job, and they get close to the sound. This just sounds like it. It's proper. They feel quite dainty anyway, because they're that medium scale, the hollow body. They feel quite like
very, very
small
lightweight,
and
of
like
course.
They're not a bass I think you can really like throw around. But it's like exquisitely made. The finishing is incredible.
The neck is amazingly deep as well. Yeah. A really deep neck, which I think really helps, really makes it feel, it's kind of, because it's quite thin but quite deep, it kind of feels like a baseball bat handle.
Yeah. And I just wound the tone off and played it through the orange, slightly grindy, not like all the way, but, you know, get a bit of kind of a warmth to it. It's my favourite bass that I played for a long time in the shop, mainly because I'm a huge Paul McCartney fan, and mainly because we never see him. And it's so nice to get my hands on an actual German-made one. It's just proper, isn't it? You know, you see so many like Chinese copies, be they Hofner branded or be the Epiphone one. To get your hands on the real one, it's just another world.
Yeah, it is completely. And I don't think I realised how remarkable the difference was going to be.
It just kind of feels like they're like a proper instrument.
I've just handed it to Jay Cross and I'm really worried now.
Yeah, I mean, old Clubby Cross, it would probably not be the best for that bass. But yeah, it feels like a really well-crafted instrument. And just a treat, really. Very absolutely nice to see.
Yeah, so, I think we've got it up at £1,200 for the second-hand. And it's just, yeah, it's...
You sort of have to be, like, a bit groovy with it, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm sort of having to...
Yeah, you can't sort of hammer into these. It's better with a pick than fingers, and it's
of
just...
Course it is. Everything
watching
is.
You try and play bass with fingers is...
Oh, God, look how hard he hits it when he uses a plectrum. Play softly.
I don't know what that means.
Oh,
God.
You know, Paul McCartney used to just play with his thumb a lot. Try doing that. There we go. It's a bit softer.
It's like a rhino trying to put together a jigsaw. Okay, so my staff pick this week. I have been thinking about mainly recording into iOS, but also maybe changing up the sound card that I use. I think spending so much time in the studio yesterday has kind of inspired me to like do some recording. And at the moment, I use Pro Tools. I use like an old M-Box and an old version of Pro Tools, which means that I have to have the M-Box plugged in to...
Yeah.
You use a similar setup, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Because the old versions of Pro Tools required you to use Pro Tools hardware, so I use the M-Box. But I used to have an Eddyroll 2 in sound card, which is now the Roland Duo Capture EX. The reason that I've been looking at this is I really liked the Eddyroll that I used to have. Really solid little sound card, good for taking out and about, which is kind of what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
My house isn't really ideal for recording, so I want to have a system that I can take out, not necessarily rely on the M-Box, because I might be using kind of other software, or just, you know, I just want to change up, really. And I just figure this is going to do it for me. Two mic pre's will also work with iOS. So
sweet.
I've got GarageBand on my phone. I kind of want the flexibility to, like...
Yeah, it's all right for busting down a demo and certainly having...
Perfect, and that's kind of why I've been looking at it, really. They kind of advertise it as like good for mobile, which is really what I want to do. I know the preamps are really good, and price-wise they're good, £119.
That's very good.
It's, you know, I hate to talk so much about Pro Audio in this Guitar Shop podcast, but I think, like, my bass is back from repair on Friday, by the way.
No,
I haven't played it yet.
No, you haven't got it
I'm
back
assuring,
yet.
I'm sure it's going to be fine. I think I might have bought all the guitars that I ever need, and now I'm kind
still
of like
still got your junior.
Still got the Les Paul Junior.
Perfect.
I've got a GS Mini Taylor, so I've got all the best ones basically. Yeah.
Still not got that telly though.
No, I know.
That
I
telly.
Know.
You,
I don't still... know. I think a Les Paul Junior is as good.
It's kind of the other one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still think
I need a
you'll,
telly.
You'll get there. You'll grow up eventually. Don't worry.
So I've been like gassing for like a load of Pro Audio equipment recently.
Why did you put, what was the
air quotes gassing? I just kind of like I want to do a lot more recording, and Duo Capture EX seems like the thing that
they're really good. They really are very,
haven't
really
you
good.
Had like Eddie Roll? Oh no, it was Matt that maybe had an Eddie Roll.
Yeah,
and maybe he had my old one. I think he did. But yeah, the stuff's just high quality, you know, with Roland it's going to be good. I kind of want to get one of the Ira TR-8s. I just want to make some computer music again.
Yeah.
And this is good because it's, you know, it's got loads of mic. It's got two mic pre's, which is perfect. They also act as guitar ins as well, so I can do the kind of guitar.
Does
stuff.
It have the COSM technology?
It won't have COSM in it. It will have I mean, it's just an interface, so it won't have any, like...
I just didn't know, because they're obviously... It's Roland. I didn't know if it...
No, it won't have any it won't have any effects or anything built in.
But you can go... You could go into an ME25.
Yeah, and then into
straight
here.
In,
can yeah, you? Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. That's my staff pick for the week. Sorry to be so pro audio focused this week.
No,
but
no, I think it's good to mix it up.
You know, you guys need to... You need an education, you two.
Okay.
Let's do some questions.
My favourite bit of the podcast so far is when you decided that we were going to zoom through the news and the staff picks so that we can focus on questions, and we've been doing this for, what, 40 minutes?
Yeah. There's a lot of questions.
All right, let's get some questions in.
Right, let's do some questions. James, I reckon, talking about this, let's be fairly succinct in our answers.
All right.
James on Facebook says, I'd like to know an in-depth history of DeArmond guitars and pickups and their current popularity.
Well, that's easy.
Well, their current popularity in terms of the guitars is that they don't exist anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. DeArmond are owned by Fender now.
Were they bought because they were part of Guild?
Yes, they were.
Then was it all bought at
the
same time?
The whole thing was bought together. Yeah. So there's at the moment, there's no guitars produced under the DeArmond brand. Although, interestingly, Guild have just announced some new Starfires, which are the 335 style.
Which was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is that not what Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks used?
You would know better than me.
I'm pretty sure that's what Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks used, was a Starfire. And the reason I'm... Was a DeArmond Starfire, yeah?
Well...
It was the DeArmond Starfire.
Why did you ask?
Well, no, I'm having second thoughts now. But no, I'm almost certain that Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks used a DeArmond Starfire. And the reason I'm relatively certain of this was about 3 or 4 years ago, Brian Eno was curating the Brighton Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And around that time, he was coming into the shop quite a lot, which was excellent, because Brian Eno is excellent. And a really, really nice dude. And we were talking about... it was a Starfire we were talking about.
Yeah.
Because he used one in the early days.
Yeah.
And then Pete Shelley used one. And Pete Shelley kind of popularised them. And then it stopped being the late 70s, early 80s. And everyone stopped caring.
Right.
But, you know, as the sort of Starcasters and Coronados have proven, the stuff that... was popular
in the 70s, late 70s and early 80s,
and then stopped being popular,
is now popular again. Yeah.
So, you know, all of this has happened before,
and all of this will happen again. I think we could do a whole podcast probably on the history of DeArmond.
Yeah.
But it's safe to say that now they've moved all of that kind of stuff over to Guild, like we're saying, like the Starfires are new. But they are still making the pickups, and we've seen those appear in previous years on things like the Gretsch Electromatics.
I have one, the 5125, I think, was my one.
One?
Yeah, and they did it in red as well. They don't do that, they don't make that model anymore.
Is there anything currently with those pickups on?
With the DeArmonds?
What about something like the Gretsch Country Gents?
I don't think the Country Gent does.
Or the Country Club?
I don't think any of the Japanese ones do.
Okay.
I can't remember. I don't think there's anything currently with DeArmond pickups in. But they are great. They are great sounding.
I think Fender will keep the brand name alive probably for those pickups. But in terms of guitars and stuff, that's all going to be under Guild now.
Mm. I've got a DeArmond Les Paul. A DeArmond Les Paul copy. That was my first guitar. The Michael Bolton.
Yeah, it's like a Bolton Les Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really great, like, first guitar.
Yeah, and I always thought that the stuff under DeArmond was really good.
Yeah.
Current popularity, which is part of the question, I would say...
Not hugely.
Like, you occasionally see those things kicking around. They don't go for huge money.
No.
But it's more the kind of spirit of that company has gone on through Fender, and they're still...
And Guild.
They're still producing the pickups, and they're now coming back in Guild line. Harry on Facebook says, wiring coil taps in yourself.
Yes.
Don't wire them in yourself.
Not into yourself.
I assume he means, how would you do a coil tap yourself? And Joe, I tasked you with looking this up because, to be honest, I just get a guitar tech to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are guitar techie guys. I like doing stuff myself.
Yeah, I'd send it off.
Yeah, but I know I'm going to mess it up.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd still mess it up.
But you do it yourself.
Yeah, I'm just okay with that. I come to terms with that responsibility. Okay.
So what did you learn from doing a bit of research?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, weirdly, because coil tapping is what we called it. You called it coil tapping earlier when we were talking about the Ibanez. Actually, that's a completely incorrect phrase. The word coil tap quite specifically applies to single coil pickups.
Okay.
It's coil splitting when you're dealing with humbuckers.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is
weird,
but they are still called coil taps. Which
I think it's just. I think it's sort of like a catch-all variable.
Weird is like, because we get some flack for this on YouTube. When we do a demo and someone goes, oh yeah, you know, if Joss is demoing guitar or Lewis and or Matt, they'll say, oh, this guitar's got coil taps, and you refer, that's what the manufacturers call them, that's kind of what has come to be known as, you know, when you go from a humbucker sound to a single coil sound.
Yeah.
But that's not the correct term, and we get a little bit of flack over it sometimes.
The dictionary definition, a coil tap would require you to have a certain amount of the copper winding in the pickup to be separated somehow, and so a coil tap would be to disengage or engage part of the coil on a single coil pickup, so to kind of change it tonally via that, whereas on a humbucker, if we're talking about going from a humbucker to a single coil, that is
just
splitting, because
you are doing exactly that.
The only thing that I can think of that has had something that I would regard as a coil tap, those Jaguars with the humbucker, the HH Jag.
Yeah.
What are they called? It's not the black top, is it?
No, just the Jaguar HH.
Jaguar HH.
Yeah.
Those have got a kind of rollable humbucker to single coil sound. So
yeah, this is the classic player, the Mexican classic player
HH,
Jaguar
HH. That's what I was trying to think of. Those, I think, are a true coil tap.
But I don't really understand how that works, because it's a gradual coil tap.
Yeah,
which is what's really weird. I mean, I don't understand.
I wonder if that is more engaging more coils, so that actually is a proper coil tap.
I think that's what that is.
Yeah.
And the further around you go, the more coils you get.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was hoping to give
Harry kind of an overview of how he could go about it, but sadly there is no kind of one way you can do it, because all brands of humbuckers are different. Basically on most modern humbuckers, you've got kind of five cables coming off of them, all different colours. And those colours vary and mean different things from company to company, so it's make it very easy for me to say which one you've got to do what with. But also, if you've got like a vintage humbucker, then you wouldn't even have those five coils separated. You would have it in a thread wound case, and you can't do anything with those. So they are uncoil tappable.
Well, I think most companies these days will offer you a two or four conductor.
I was going to suggest that Bare Knuckle are the again, we talk about them quite a lot, but Bare Knuckle are the like forefront of this sort of.
Yeah, I mean, they just make it really easy, because they give you the option two conductor or four conductor. If you never want to coil tap it, get the two conductor one. If you might want to coil tap it, get the four conductor, because that will allow you to put a coil split in there.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, for whatever pickup you have, you should be able to look up a PDF of the actual cable diagrams, and then you can apply kind of a root rule to it there. I mean, the other thing to consider with doing a coil tap or split is kind of how you want that option to be available in the guitar. So whether you want the very common, which is kind of push-pull pots, you could also have it on a flick switch, so you could drill a separate couple of holes in your scratch plate and fit them like that. But if you wanted a push pull flick switch, it's important to remember that those pots come in 250k or 500k variables. Obviously 500s for humbuckers, 250s for singles, so don't make that mistake. It is much easier to get a tech to do this, because I think it is quite a job.
There's a few questions come up here that people are asking about similar things on guitars and amps, and our advice generally is talk to a guitar tech. Like, you can just get yourself in so much trouble trying to do these things yourself, and some people really enjoy that. Personally, for me, I just want to book it in and get my guitar out the other side with the fix, you know, the fix that I want done.
With the frets back in place.
Well, yes, as we're going to find out tomorrow, seeing what state my bass comes back in. We'll see how the frets are.
I bet it plays better than it's ever played before.
Yeah, I mean, I am totally expecting... Right, I was just worried. It's like sending your child to hospital and not seeing it again.
Is this how my mum felt when I went to have my tonsils removed?
Yes, it is exactly that. I've put my base in to get the fretsery done. I really, really hope that it comes back okay. I'm sure it will. I'm sure it's going to be fine.
It's going to be great. It's going to play better than it's ever played before.
I don't think I've ever seen you genuinely worried.
I'm genuinely worried.
It's going to play better than it's ever played before.
You've got that Music Man Stingray though.
Yeah, I know. It's not the same. It's not the same. Callum via email says, "Hi guys, just wanted to know what your favourite alternate tunings are other than dropped tunings. I am going to quickly say, I don't think I've ever used one."
This is being asked of a podcast that's made up mostly of people who only play punk rock. I'm not included in that,
I know you're partial to a little bit of alternate tuning.
Not drop tuning, so it has to be a complete alternate tuning.
Well, I went through a phase of giving Dadgad a go, just because I think it sounds quite sad and quite cool. But then I realised that I don't know any chords. I mean, I can barely play chords in standard tuning. And so I was just sort of going, oh, it sounds good. Oh, no, it sounds rubbish. Oh, no, it sounds rubbish as well. And then I sort of just tuned back up to standard tuning. And I went, yeah, G, E, E, yeah.
But you must know, you're down with the kids.
Yeah.
You must know what people are using these days.
I think a lot of Dadgad, a lot of open tunings, like a bit of open D and open G,
yeah.
Of sort of. I think again, it comes back to, you know, the all of this has happened before, this has happened again thing. You know, the Stones were playing in open G. Quite how I know that, I don't know, but I do know that there's a bunch of Stone songs is in open G,
wow.
And that's sort of becoming popular again. Is that, you know, because you can get these weird ringy, less so I guess with G, but like with like open D and stuff, you can get some kind of sad sounding open tunings and open chords, it sounds good.
I should know more about this, just because I'm in a math band.
Yeah.
And that's all the rage. Actually, my girlfriend plays in a band with Luke Taft, who's one of our guitar purchasers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
People will know him from our NAMM podcast.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And he is all about the weird tunings.
I mean, he's got a degree in physics.
Yeah,
like, if he's not going to be down with the open tunings, then I'm not sure who. Yeah,
exactly. He has two strats, and I think I don't know exactly what they are. One is like open E.
He plays in open F sharp minor,
and the other one is something like open something else sharp minor.
Yeah.
It's there, and he has those two guitars that he has to alternate between. For
I've got a lot of respect for people who do it. I just can't get my head around it.
I don't understand it. My friend's band Hookworms, who we've talked about a couple of times. I went and hung out with them a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guitarists was very keen to show me his new guitar, which was this like weird Italia thing. And I thought his guitar was out of tune, but they're playing like open F or open F flat or something like open F. I don't know.
Open F flat.
Not open F flat. That's not a real thing. Open F sharp. The other one, the one that's not the in tune, the one that's sort
the
of
out
the,
of tune.
Yeah, the out of tune.
Right.
And I thought it was that, and I couldn't construct any chords.
No.
I think it's a testament to people who understand that sort of thing. I think is really cool. But I just don't understand something.
I've seen a couple of bands actually that I've played with recently. The bass players have had, and I actually mentioned this on the podcast a few weeks ago, that I was interested in setting up an instrument in this way. But I played with a band whose bass player played a four string but tuned it to B, E, A, D.
I was just about to say, that's the only other thing that I can think is quite popular.
I don't think that's an open tuning.
No, it's not an open tuning.
I don't think that's an that's a drop tuning.
Right.
I don't think that.
Oh, because it's a five string
tuning
without
tuning.
The fifth string. Well, it's a different tuning for a. Well, I see what you mean. So every string's in the same place.
Yeah.
It's not a different way. Like your hand shapes are still exactly the same, but everything's lower. So I suppose yes, you're right. It is a drop tuning. But for a bass, I mean, they're really. That, you know, there's because we're not really very dependent on chords at all. Like there's not much call for it.
That's true.
You kind of work around it.
One of the things that we did that me and one of the other guys who worked here went through a phase of doing was trying to think of tunings that you could spell. So like Baghdad. I mean, I realise that, you know, there's an H in, you know, but, well, you know, whatever. But, like, you know, I think that's quite cool. If you can come up with a tuning that is a word.
Dad, dad.
Dad, dad gag.
Hey!
I was going to say, the only other tuning I've ever played in is a couple of weeks after I saw President of the United States of America play live. I bought an Epiphone Explorer and tuned it. I think it was C sharp, G sharp, C sharp, three strings, and that's the tuning. That's what they use for every song.
Is it?
Yeah, the guitarist plays.
Because he plays a four string guitar.
No, the guitarist plays a git bass, which is a three string. Wait, let me get this right.
But it is just an ordinary SG that he's modded.
No,
it?
He's playing. So the guitarist plays a Les Paul Junior, and I think he plays a three string, C okay. sharp, G sharp, C sharp.
Right.
And the singer, who's the bass player, or the bass tar player, plays a two string in C sharp and G sharp. I think that's right. They're just the best
bands.
That's the best tuning. Why do you need any more than that?
It's good. They were mine and Mark's old band played with them, and they were so good. They were so good.
Very, very good indeed. In fact, we're talking about maybe getting the guitarist in to do some stuff in store.
I did not know that. That is completely excellent.
The bass guitarist? The git bassist?
Yeah.
Not the
bass. The one that's the Les Paul.
Right.
I've forgotten the guy's name, but we'd maybe get him in to do some stuff. Let's do another question. Gaz on Facebook says, how about replacing valves / biasing, and what kind of valves to go for to match your sound? Personally, this is something else that I would always refer to a guitar tech. Like, I just don't get involved in this side of things. Joe, I mean, have you ever done anything in terms of... I mean, I can replace a tube. That's fine.
Yeah, if
like for like, that's what I would always go for. I tend to think on this, like, if I've bought an amp that I like the sound of, I'm not that fussed about changing the tubes.
I know that Matt's going to disagree with us and will be shouting at the podcast whilst we say it, but I think that there are more important things that you can adjust to alter your tone than the tubes.
Yeah.
In your... I don't think that's... That changing the tubes is going to give you a sound that would be more suitable or less suitable any more than changing the tone on your instrument, the type of strings you're using, the pedal you're putting in front of it, the tone on the amplifier. Those are really... that's it. I know we're supposed to be sort of the sort of high-end geek elite of this, and so we should now be banging on about valves and the different companies that make different things and glass thickness and how that alters tone. But I don't see anything. As far as biasing goes, I think the Orange have recently introduced a tool that makes that sort of thing a world easier.
Like the valve tester.
It's brilliant. We've got one here, and it makes our lives so much easier.
Definitely,
so much easier. If you're doing a lot of, sort of tinkering, you'd be an absolute idiot not to have the Orange valve tester. Yeah. It's brilliant.
I can't believe that it's not something that more companies have jumped on. I mean, I'm sure there are other ones available on the market.
I mean, it's super niche, isn't it? I mean, it's made for guitar techs essentially.
Yeah, but certainly, if I was on the road with a band and all of us were playing valve amps, and you know it was a long tour, I think having something like a valve tester there would be just the sort of piece of kit that you want to take with you.
Yeah, definitely, it's just definitely worth picking up if you're going through a lot of tubes, or if you're doing a lot of gigs. Basically, just get the valve tester and make sure you're getting the best out of the tubes. I mean, that's the only thing I would say about tubes is like, make sure that you replace them fairly regularly. Like, but it depends on what sound you want.
Yeah,
like slightly dulled. So,
I just think, you know, I'm a little bit reluctant to say change a valve super regularly, because you know how regularly is regularly. You know,
well, it depends on the amount of gigs you're doing, of course, and what sound you want. And
I would say, first thing I'd say is if you're going through valves super quickly, you're probably doing something wrong with your amp.
There is something wrong with your amp.
Or there is something wrong with your amp. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's one of these things that if you are a touring band, or if you are someone who's just into tinkering, the Valve Tester is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant piece of kit.
Let's do another question. This one, not so much about gear, really. This is about kind of guitar playing in general. Ollie on Twitter says, can you speak about ear training for guitarists and the lost art of playing effective rhythm guitar?
I didn't know it was a lost art.
Well, I thought that. And do you know what? I have been listening to... Recently, I've actually been practicing bass playing, like, probably for the first time in about 10 years. I've been like sitting down listening to records. I've been listening to a lot of Beatles, and I've been listening to a lot of stuff where the bass lines are played by Duck Dunn, so a lot of the kind of Stax and Atlantic stuff. What's so great about those records, as well as the bass playing, which is what I've been focusing on, is the like pop rhythm guitar playing. I also listen to quite a lot of like modern pop. And there's guitars in places where you don't expect them. Like, loads of chart music has got rhythm guitar playing in it.
Yeah.
And you listen to something like... And we get quite a lot of flack for this because one of our guys used it in one of the demo videos. Listen to the tune Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus. I'm about to get completely cussed. I realise this.
No. I'm 100% backing up on this. The guitar on that song is so good.
And it's like in a place you totally wouldn't expect it. And the guitar playing on that is... And the lick is as good as like a Stax or Atlantic record.
So good. I mean, I don't care if we get cussed for this. That song is incredible. It's so. I mean, Part in the USA is. I've got to be honest with you. Part in the USA is top five karaoke jams for me.
It's a big jam.
But the guitar playing on it is so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
Listen to that song and tell me. Tell me that guitar playing is so good. So good.
So I don't think it is a lost art. I think there's perhaps not... Rhythm guitar playing in the guitar world is not as celebrated as lead playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So your big names, the people that are going to be on the front of Guitarist magazine, they're not going to be people, I don't think, really, that are known for their...
I mean,
rhythm play, but
think of your big sort of rhythm players. I mean, no, I think you're completely correct. I mean, if I was to say, okay, who's the big rhythm player? The first name that comes to mind is Izzy Stradlin. It's like, when did he stop playing guitar for Guns N' Roses?
Yeah,
you know, it's like that's the first name that comes to mind.
For me, like, you know, I've been banging on about those Stax records, but like Steve Cropper for me is the ultimate rhythm guitarist. Yeah. Who he can play some amazing lead stuff as well, Hit the genius of his playing is that it's just like quite, it's so like subtle and so minimal. Like, you listen to that lick on like Soul Man or something like that, where it's just, it's an iconic lick, but it's kind of held back.
Yeah.
That's not what makes the tune. Whereas when you talk about lead guitar playing, it's like, oh my god, that solo was amazing. It was all over, like Steve Vai just, you know, he played so many notes and the solo went on for 15 minutes and it was amazing. That's not what rhythm guitar playing is, and I don't think it's like a lost art. I think it's still out there, and people are still using it on pop records.
You're just it's in the wrong.
It depends on kind of the type of rhythm guitar playing, I suppose, or kind of maybe what you mean by rhythm guitar playing. Because for me, I find that most of my favourite bands are three pieces, and I'm very adverse, just automatically, when I hear records that have more than one guitar in it, and it is probably because I'm a bass player. And as soon as you...
And you hate guitarists, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I hate guitarists. But as soon as you crowd guitars on there, you cover up the bass, which is stupid. And also, I think it's ridiculous that guitarists need more than one of you to be able to string a song together.
Look at someone like Muse. You know, you love Muse.
I hate Muse.
Yes. I did try and get a Muse gag in there earlier. That was good. That was pre-planned. Sorry, Joe.
Wonderful. But if you look at, like, the Jimi Hendrix experience, or you look at Led Zeppelin, or you look at Cream, these are all, like, really kind of... quintessential three pieces where the guitarist, you probably associate all of those guitarists, you probably wouldn't call them rhythm guitarists, but they were the only guitarist in their band.
Yeah.
And so they were doing the whole lot, and I think there's kind of more to be said for that. So if rhythm guitar's not being celebrated, I don't know, maybe it's because I think maybe a guitarist should be able to do more. than that.
I'm not sure it's that. I think that rhythm guitar playing is not like flashy, it's not sexy, you know, whereas lead guitar playing is the thing that's celebrated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what we're saying is there's still loads of good rhythm guitar
out
there.
Was the question about ear training?
Yeah, the other thing was ear training. And to be honest, I have never... I mean, I had like 5 guitar lessons. I've learned everything by ear. I mean, I assume that's what he means by ear training.
Is it about like learning to tune by ear and stuff like that? Because I cannot do that. I've worked in a guitar... I'm manager of a guitar shop, but I still need to get my phone out to tune a guitar. But then again, I've got chronic tinnitus, so
yeah.
You know,
I mean, I think
there's a lot going on.
When it comes down to tuning by ear, I think that's a totally personal thing. Some people can do it and some people can't do it. I've worked in a guitar shop for 13 years. I have managed to pick it up. But like you're saying, you've been here for a while and you still need to use a tuner. If you mean ear training in terms of learning songs by ear, that's how I've learned to play guitar. And granted, I'm probably not the best guitarist in the world. Certainly not the best guitarist in the world. But I think... I don't know, it's just a different way of learning guitar, isn't it? I just don't think it matters too much whether you're watching a YouTube tutorial or just listen to the tune and play it. Joe, I mean, did you ever have any like formal training?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I had guitar.
Band. Of course, he's never had any formal training.
Yeah, brilliant. That's great. No, I had guitar lessons when I was much younger, but then when I moved on to bass, no, I didn't have any training in that. But, you know, you just pick it up playing along to stuff. So I spent a lot of time playing along to, like, Rage tracks and Blink-182 tracks.
And just picked it up by listening to it. I guess that's kind of... We all kind of come from a punk perspective.
Not these tracks.
we all kind of come from a punk background that was kind of big when we were growing up and learning to play guitar. So yeah. all of that, you know, it's kind of uncool to learn to get the tab book for Enema of the State.
I had the tab book for Americana.
Well, oh, there we go.
I still couldn't play the solo and the kids aren't all right. I probably could now. Mm. Well, maybe not, actually.
Let's move on. Mark on Facebook says, setting up a compressor. I have a CS2, but any generic tips would help as I'm always tweaking and never happy. This is another one I made you do a bit of research on.
Yeah, well, I didn't need to research it. I just printed off a picture of it because I wanted to have the CS2 in front of me. The CS2 is one of my favourite compressors. One of my favourite bass players, Juan Alderet, swears by the CS2. I've got a CS3 on my board at the moment. I think they're really, really great, really simple compressors. So, you know, first of all, I'm kind of surprised that you can't get a good sound out of it. It's a really, really responsive compressor. It brings out... all your harmonics, especially on basses, really, really well. So I suppose kind of setting it up, maybe you want to sort of take it down to sort of the basic level. It's got 3 controls on it, a CS2. You've got level, attack and sustain, so it's a very simple compressor in that sense. With the level, I kind of find, now I'm always going to come at this from a bassist's angle, so stop me if some of it's not applicable to guitarists, but I mean I always find with level that I try and marry that up with the uncompressed sound for my amplifier.
So you try and make switching the pedal on as transparent as possible.
Well, it's always going to stay on for me, because then a compressor always does stay on for bass players. I appreciate guitarists might not use it in that way, so if you want it, if it needs to be a boost or a cut, obviously that's all the level control is going to kind of be there for. I level it up, which tends to be about 2/3 to 3/4 of the revolution of that switch. Then I suppose the other kind of really important one is sustain, which is poorly named in many ways, because that's basically compression. So
yep. So it's not how long the compression envelope stays open for.
Exactly. It's the compression. So the higher you've got that sustain, the more compression you've got kind of on that on the note. So the less you have, the more natural sound of the original note you're going to have. So on a bass, I tend to have it about 1/3 of the way round, because I still retain kind of enough punch that when I dig in, it's heard. But with it kind of evening everything out across the board. And then attack is your central control, which is exactly that. So kind of the further you have it round, that's kind of dealing with all those unwanted sounds, the kind of the clicks of a plectrum, things like that. So the further you have it round, the more that it's going to sort of allow those sounds to kind of come through, that sort of full initial attack, the sort of the starting attack of the note as you hit it. So, you know, have it the whole way round if you want something that's going to be quite aggressive. I mean, that's quite straightforward, you know, and then shut it off the more you want to even out that initial hit on the instrument.
I would say with compression, it depends on what you want it to do. If you want it to be really transparent and thicken up your sound, then there's a way to set it for that. If you want it to be an effect almost, then there's a completely different set of settings. Personally, for me, I'd prefer it to be transparent and just make it kind of as subtle as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the CS2 and 3, which is the current one, will totally do that.
Yeah, the 3 basically just introduced the tone control on there as well, just a sort of bass to treble, sort of passive tone control.
I really like them for guitar and bass, one of my favourite compressors, and they're no money.
Yeah, exactly. They're really, really good. I forgot what I was going to say then.
Okay.
we went totally off track. Sorry. Carry on.
Let's do another question, as you seem to have lost the plot. And actually, there's two questions.
Oh, that was what I was going to say.
Do it.
If you go onto the Boss website, they have all the PDFs of all their pedals that they've ever done. And the CS2 is on there.
PDFs of the manuals.
Yeah, that's right, sorry. PDFs of the manuals for all the pedals they've ever done. And if you go on there, like with all Boss manuals, they do control setting suggestions on the last page.
So
they've got sort of
that.
Three or four sort of for like some light compression, some really full-on 80s compression, things like that. So yeah, have a look at those just for some ideas of maybe where you want to take it.
Let's do... There's two questions... which kind of
are the same thing,
go
kind
down
of?
The same path. So Nathan on Facebook says, discuss the new Schecter 9 string if you haven't already. And Carbon Toe on Twitter says, is the current trend for increasing the number of strings on guitar treading on bassist toes? Now, the Schecter that he's talking about is the C9, one of the first production 9 strings. Ibanez are doing one this year as well, which we've talked about. As far as I'm aware, the 9 string that was on display at NAMM is one of the prototypes. We've got no dates in the UK for them yet. They are on their way, but we don't know when they'll be. I mean, 9 strings, how do we feel? Is it stepping on the bassist's toes?
Well, I suppose I suppose it is, in a way. If you look at the best use of like 8-string guitars is probably... Animals as Leaders, and they don't have a bass player. They have 2 8-string guitarists.
I kind of don't
feel it's treading on their toes, because I think it's redefining what a guitar and a guitarist is and are. They're doing both, and it's incredible work. It's incredible musicianship if you listen to Animals as Leaders, and a band that can actually really proficiently work their way around an 8-string instrument and kind of feel. Like, they're doing quite literally 2 jobs, and they're not doing 2 jobs by, like, you know, when you see two-piece bands with just a drummer and a guitarist, and all they've got is
an octave pedal.
And that's making up for not having a bass player, which it doesn't.
No.
But this is a genuine way of doing both jobs, so I've been really inspired by it, and I think it's... They're not guitarists. An 8-string guitar is not a guitar. It's like a whole new thing.
See, I constantly find it strange that you're into it, because you always sort of...
You're finding the corner for bassists.
Yeah, and you always sort of have a go at us.
Yeah.
Full stop. Like, you know, as guitarists, you always, you know... And I think it's really interesting that you are sort of... You're such a champion of these sort of... you know, the new wave of the low end, the new wave of the low end. That's your next record. There you go. But no, like I honestly think it's something I can't get my head around. And I think it's the thing that I always do whenever I sit down with one of these guitars is you can't see it as just cool. I'm just gonna play power chords.
Yeah.
Lower.
It doesn't work like that.
Well, I mean, it does, but it just it sounds bad a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, the tension in those strings is such that if you're trying to hit big chords down there, it just kind of... I mean, this is no reflection on the guitar, the quality of the guitar, because, you know, like the Tosin Abasi is a really expensive guitar, but, like, power chords in the traditional sense just kind of don't work on
that. No, I don't think so.
And that's why I think your bass player, to do real low-end big sounds, is still a vital part of any band. I just think on, you know, like an 8-string or a 9-string or a 7-string to some respect, you still need a bass player to fill in that real, like, almost the timbre of the, like, bass.
Because
they don't sound like bass guitars. They don't give you all that bottom end. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast. Even though, like, some of the pitches are crossing over, it doesn't sound, well, it doesn't have that fat low end.
I mean, baritone guitars have been around for decades and decades, and, you know, they're not stepping on our toes at all.
No.
In fact, the guitarist in my band dropped tunes to B.
Right.
On a 6-string, and I only play a 4-string, so I don't even have an open B to go to.
No. Yeah, I think they're not treading on each other's toes, but they're bringing in new ways of kind of... They're bringing in new ways of playing the guitar, which is what we've said. You know, we've said it many times in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a completely new thing. So I don't think it's stepping on either toes, because I think you've got to be such a remarkable player to be able to pick up one of these instruments. And I think it's just a totally different kettle of fish.
Definitely. Let's do a couple more questions because we're running way over time. Jonathan on Facebook says, can you do a comparison between the Line 6 Amplify 150 and the Roland KC-110 and their suitability for a solo act using one instrument with voice and tracks?
This is kind of your bag.
Yeah, I think if you... It doesn't make it 100% clear in the question, but if you want to put your vocal through the amp as well, if you want to use it like a mini
PA... I think that's
what
they're saying, yeah.
Then 100% get the Roland. And use an iPod or your phone or whatever to play the tracks through like you normally would with a, you know, like a jack lead into the amp.
They've got three inputs, I think, don't they?
Yeah,
the KC-110?
Yes, so you've got enough there to use it as a small PA. The Amplify is not that.
It's just a guitar amp.
It's a home entertainment system / guitar amp.
Yeah, guitar amp / hi-fi type thing, yeah.
There's no microphone in on there. What will be better on that is, you know, if you've got an iOS device, you can Bluetooth straight to the amp. You don't have to plug it in cable-wise. Plus, you've got all the tone selection stuff that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. And just make it really easy to get the sound of the records that you like and jam along. They're certainly loud enough and they've certainly got the quality of sound to do gigs. Whether you want to be using that feature for gigging necessarily, I'm not sure. Unless you do a covers band, like a specific covers band. I mean, they don't have the mic in. Simple as that. If you want to plug your vocal, like put your vocal through it, the Amplify won't do that. I think you need to go for the Roland.
But if you were, you know, you can use the PA. You know, you can...
Yeah. I mean, 100%. You know, you could do the vocal through your PA and then have your guitar tones coming out there. Personally, I think the KC-110, as long as you have got some sort of guitar amp modelling in front, because obviously that's a keyboard
amp. Well, I'd argue, if you were going that way, I'd argue that the BA-330... would be the way to go.
Yeah, so BA-330 is like a small...
It's a small one, like self-contained PA unit.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain it's got the COSM technology in it.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I'd probably still recommend going into some sort of like an ME-25 or something. But, you know, if you're a solo act and you want to have like guitar and vocals and, you know, keyboards or whatever going through it, I think the BA-330 is an incredible unit, absolutely incredible. A mate of mine got married in the summer, and he asked me to sort out the
PA.
Music.
Yeah.
And I hired a BA-330, and it just sounded it sounded so good.
Yeah.
It sounded so good. You know, there was 100 people dancing outside to Justin Timberlake or whatever. And then Andrew WK
Standard.
Came next. And then there was a Beatles song. And, you know, like, it covered the entire range of the spectrum.
How about this?
And it was so good.
How about this? Your setup is a BA-330 and an ME-80, which has got the line input.
Yeah.
So you can run whatever you're getting the tracks from into that. out of that into the PA, minimal cables, yep. but you've got loads of guitar tones at your
Absolutely.
Disposal.
Yeah, great.
How about that? That's your ideal setup. Last question. Nathan on Facebook says, what's the difference between a precision and jazz bass, and which one is suited for different which one is better suited for different styles of music?
Sure, I'm not sure we've got time for this question.
No,
do
this
Mark,
is
do
a this is a full this is a full podcast. But it's also a kind of a kind of a an age old thing, isn't it? It's
well, yeah, like I mean, for ages, people have been saying the precision bass is the best bass ever made, and just use it on everything.
In the same way that you'd say, you know, what's better? This is the same question as what's better, a Tele or a Strat? And the answer is obviously a Telecaster. In the way that the answer here is obviously a precision bass.
Okay. Right. All three of us play P basses. I do have a jazz. Right, I do really want a jazz bass.
Let's end the podcast with a debate.
Okay.
Jay and I are both saying P basses, okay. but probably...
No, it's not asking which one's better, it's asking what the differences are. It says which one's better for different styles of okay. music, and actually, for different styles of music, I think they both cover really, really similar things. They're both so applicable across the
yeah.
board.
And because they've been the gold standard of bass guitars for such a long time...
Yeah.
They've been used on everything. There's metal stuff with the jazz bass, mm-hmm. there's jazz stuff with the P bass, there's blues with both, there's, I don't know, klezmer. I once sold a girl in a klezmer band a P bass.
What's a klezmer?
It's like,
klezmer?
As far as I'm aware, it's like Russian folk music.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Someone will cool. probably correct me, but that's kind of how she described it. And she was using a P bass for that. Personally, obviously, Jay and I prefer the P bass.
Let's give kind of a very, very brief and quick concept of what you will get from each. So the P bass is the more simple of the two, so perfect for Jay and Mark.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're just dealing with one pickup, one split humbucker, bang in the middle of the body, which is kind of it's a very middly position to put something, but it means you've still got kind of all that low end and all kind of the tight highs in there as well without any messing around. It's just an ultimate location for a pickup on a bass. A very simple set of controls with a volume and a master tone and kind of a big chunky neck. And you'd just be surprised, just as it is, without messing around with anything on the instrument, just how good it sounds on any record without doing anything to the tone on your amp. Without adding anything else, it will cut through every mix and it sounds absolutely brilliant. And that is the reason that it's the first bass ever made and is still the most popular bass ever made. No one can knock it off of that pedestal in all these years since 51.
Why would someone buy a jazz?
Well, I suppose it comes back to, and I've spoken about it a little bit before, but the reason that the jazz bass was introduced, which was when Leo Fender went to bass players, who at the time, if they wanted to play a Fender bass, were playing a P bass because it was the only option. He went to them and said, what don't you like about a P bass? And the feedback that they gave him was that the neck was a little chunky, so the jazz bass has a taper to the neck. It's more slender, it's easier to get your hands around if you want to play quicker.
Considerably thinner at the nut.
Exactly, yeah. And people wanted some options, which you don't have on the P bass. It just sounds great on everything. But people wanted some options, so it's two single coils, one in the middle of the body, so you can solo that pickup and get quite a P bass-esque tone, a little bit less output. And then one pickup right on the bridge, so it kind of brings through loads of your harmonics, and a lot of modern bass playing depends on a pickup in that sort of area.
Yeah,
we've certainly moved away from like Tele basses and SG basses where you had mudbuckers in the neck position, P basses where it's just a pickup in the middle, and we've moved, you know, more and more towards kind of Musicman Stingrays where we've got humbuckers on the bridge. Any active instrument you can think of
much,
has got
much brighter, much more defined tone.
Exactly.
I guess the jazz was the start of that.
Yeah, exactly so. So a jazz bass is going to sound brilliant on any record and you're going to mess around with it and it's going to sound great for funk because, you know, you've rolled off a little bit of that neck pickup and those highs are really kind of coming through from the bridge pickup. It's going to sound great for rock because you're going to roll off that bridge pickup completely and make it sound like a P bass.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's great about it. It's just a really pro looking, very, the body is really comfortable. They went for an offset body because it's similar to the Jaguars and Jazzmaster guitars. So the body's a bit bigger. It's got some more weight to it, which, you know, I suppose in theory would add kind of a little bit more sustain. I find them really comfortable to sort of strap up high, which is what I tend to do with my P bass, and the body shape is great for that. Just having kind of, you know, those volume and tone controls available to you makes them very usable. But they're wicked for everything, and you will mess around with them. A P bass
is wicked for everything.
Everything.
And you don't
anyway,
necessarily have don't to mess around with it.
So if you can get your hand around the thick neck, which, you know, let's not forget that the best bass player in the world, Matt Freeman, who also plays jazz basses, so you can shut up. He has jazz basses as
well.
Yeah, but
well as he's got a signature P bass.
Yeah, but
with
he also
a super
plays
chunky
jazz
neck.
Basses.
Yeah.
No, it's not a super chunky neck.
It's
a 70s neck. It's got a taper. The Billy Sheehan one has got a thicker, fatter, wider,
does
deeper
it?
Neck.
Really?
It's,
cool.
It's the into thickest
it.
Neck. It's the thickest
really?
Neck wow. that Yamaha would let him have on the bass.
Really?
He wanted more. But yeah, the Billy Sheehan, plays, you know, he's the fastest bass player in the world, and he plays the thickest, deepest
chunky,
neck profile
neck.
You can get.
I mean, at the end of the day, this all comes down to personal preference. I would say even more so than like a Strat or a Tele, because I think that I don't think a Tele is a good guitar for playing funk. I just don't think it has that alpha phase sound that you need.
Yeah.
And I don't think a Strat is as good a guitar as playing country. I think Tele's ideal for that. With P bass and jazz, could you see someone in a punk band playing a P bass? Yes. Could you see someone in a punk band playing a jazz? Yes. Could you see someone in an R&B band playing a P bass? Yes. Could you see someone in an R&B band playing a jazz? Yes.
I think like the lines are far more blurred.
Yes.
Definitely.
So, Nathan, there is no simple answer on it. Joe's given you an overview of kind of the differences between the two. Get your hands on one. Come down to the store if you can. Come say hello. And
then walk out with a P bass.
And probably run into Jay and he'll tell you to buy a P bass.
Krista, who works in our bass department, he's another massive P bass advocate. And today he showed me the Custom Shop 63 jazz bass that we've got in Olympic
proper,
White.
Yeah.
I've never heard a jazz bass sound like that. It's massive.
Yeah, it's proper. Yeah.
Like everything that you know would make me lean towards P bass over jazz bass, basically that a P bass is louder and a bit nastier and more aggressive, this jazz bass has.
Yeah,
it has kind of, you know, that sort of slightly more comfortableness to it of a jazz
so,
bass.
Best bet, Nathan, if you're local, come down and try some stuff out and we'll go from there, really. Like we say, it's very much personal preference on those two because they are the two best basses ever made.
Yes.
Thanks for all the questions this week. It was really good to hear from loads of people, especially on Facebook, because we've not taken a huge amount of questions from Facebook before. It's cool to know that there's a kind of podcast listening community on there. If you do want to get in touch, we want to do more questions every week. You can get in touch either via email, podcast@gak.co.uk, or on Twitter, which is where we normally take questions from, which is @gak_co_UK, or on Facebook, facebook.com/gakmusic, or you can send them to me directly on Twitter, which is @mark_random. If you want to get in touch with Jay Cross or Joe Branton, how can they do so?
You can send me an email at j.cross@gak.co.uk. Or you can get at me on Twitter, JAYBM1. Every time I say it, I see you sort of begin to mouth it. Is though
it
I've forgotten
it. It sort of sounds
it.
Like you have forgotten
no,
it.
No, J-A-Y-B-M-1. But it's J-A-Y. It's my name and then
where you live.
The first bit of the postcode where I live. So JAYBM1.
What do you want to hear from people about this week? You've been banging on about cats on amps.
Yeah, cats on amps. Cats on amps have sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit, which is a shame. I'm big into the cats on amps. The other thing, which I'm quite into at the moment, is a conversation I've had with a few of my mates. And actually, I don't think we've spoken about this. You can probably chime in with this.
Dogs on amps.
Can you name a 60s band where all of the members are no longer alive? So this is a conversation that came up on Facebook between one of my mates, or a few of our mates, and I've sort of since sort of brought this out a few times. And the only band that we can think of is the Jimi Hendrix Experience. So if you can think of any other...
Is that true? I don't think that's true.
It's not true because...
Really?
Do you mean original lineup?
The original lineup.
Okay.
The original lineup. 60s band, original lineup, all of them dead.
Okay, that's good. I want to hear.
Here we go. So there
feel,
we go.
Feel free to copy me in on that one. I'd
original,
like to hear
the original lineup of 60s bands.
Because the final lineup, no, because the bass player, I can't remember his name.
Noel Redding.
Me. No, no, Noel Redding's original lineup.
Is he dead?
Well, if he's Jimi Hendrix experience, yeah.
I don't know that, but I'm saying if I don't know if Noel Redding is, but I know for a fact that the bass player that replaced Noel Redding, who only did like live shows and stuff, and is on any of the live recordings you hear of Jimi Hendrix later stuff, is still kicking around.
But then you've got someone like, you know, Ramones. Ramones are all dead.
Not 60s band.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you can go one way or another. You can go 50s where, like, you can name loads of bands where they're all dead. You go 70s where, even then, you can name quite a few bands where they're all dead. Ramones
depends. Depends on which lineup you're talking.
Well, yeah, original lineup. Rocket to Russia. 79?
A thingy is still alive. The original drummer is still alive.
Anyway.
Marky. No, not Marky. Tommy.
No.
Christ, right. So help Jay out on Twitter.
Who's the original member of the
Joe Branton, where can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can email me on joe.branton@gak.co.uk or you can tweet me at @Yosef_900. I am going to tweet some pictures right now of this amazing Hofner bass, so check it out.
And obviously, if you want to get in touch with missing member Matt Knight, you can get him @Matt_KnightC. That's Knight with SIE on the end. Tell him how much you've missed him this podcast and complain about how much we've been rambling this week. Thanks very much. Stick with us next week and we'll have loads more news for you.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Farewell.
Cheers.
Goodbye. God bless.
Bye. Hello, 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 guys on Facebook. How about replacing valves and biasing?